Welcome to It's All Politics from NPR News. I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin.
And Ken, it's a pleasure to have you here in Washington.
You said that last week. I'm in Washington.
It's still a pleasure having you here in Washington, Ken.
And it's also a pleasure having Rick Santorum as the Republican frontrunner. Explain that to me. Is he now the frontrunner because he won Colorado, Minnesota, and Missouri?
The total number of people who took part in all three of those
same
events
number of people in this room
would be about the same number of people in this room. No, the number of people listening to this podcast would be like the number of delegates that he won in those three events.
If either of those scenarios were funny, Ron, we'll use them in the podcast.
All right, but barring that, we'll go right ahead and say that Rick Santorum has become the front runner without winning a meaningful event.
Right. That's exactly
all it. All right, I'll back up. Iowa was a meaningful
event. Yeah, but he didn't win until
January. January. But we are now in mid-February, and he has won two caucuses and one beauty contest primary.
Three caucuses. Iowa.
Well, right. But in February, he has won these two caucuses and a beauty contest primary in Missouri where people were essentially told, don't vote. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, but
we're not assigning any delegates.
Right. And
but the Santorum people
came out.
He
clobbered Romney.
And he clobbered Romney with about 6% of the state's Republicans taking part. Now, I would be willing to posit that if you had a statewide contest in any of those states where you had election day type turnout, Rick Santorum would not have done quite so well.
That's not the point.
But now, because he got all that tremendous publicity from those three events, and because, and this is crucial, he appears now to be the leading alternative to Mitt Romney, a not-so-popular supposed frontrunner. Based on the fact that Newt Gingrich disappeared after winning South Carolina. Mm. In fact, right after, the very night he had won the South Carolina primary,
hasn't been heard from since.
Gave a nothing burger of a victory speech that wasn't even very energetic.
This is what boggles the mind about this Republican race. January 21st, Newt Gingrich wins South Carolina. Mitt Romney's in big, big trouble. 10 days later, Mitt Romney wins Florida, and it's over. You know,
it's over.
Mm-hmm. He gets all the constituencies and the Republican.
Put a fork in it.
Exactly, right, exactly. So, and he's the nominee, and who's going to be his running mate? Is it going to be Marco Rubio? Is it going to be Bob McConnell?
Yes.
Is it going to be Margaret Chase Smith?
I think so.
Yeah, it could be. And so, and then everything's fine, and then comes Nevada, which is
just a coronation.
Right.
Guy gets more than half the vote.
And then 9 votes in Colorado, 15 votes in Minnesota, and, you know, the non-binding vote in Missouri.
Those are votes, not delegates.
Right. Yeah, no, not delegates at all. And so now the latest polls approaching Michigan, Rick Santorum, Michigan. Now,
home state, Mitt Romney, or one of several.
Well, he was born and raised there. And
that kind of counts.
And his governor was father in the 60s.
That's right, and that should count for something. And let's also face it, another criticism of our industry, we want this contest as media organizations. We want it to go on. We all have a lot invested in it, if you will. We want to keep this story rolling, and so it's better narrative. It's more exciting to say, there's somebody who could beat Mitt Romney. And when Newt Gingrich disappointed as an opponent, we all came crashing over to Rick Santorum.
I'm not convinced it's the media who are leading this dynamic here, because I just think that obviously from the beginning we've seen a strong desire for an anybody-but-Romney alternative. Now, the question is, can Rick Santorum do in a primary what you can do in a caucus? I mean, Michigan is, you know, a lot of folks there, and it's a very expensive state. It's a huge state, and you need money. But again, the polls show that he's ahead in Michigan as well. I saw a Quinnipiac poll this week that shows him ahead in Ohio as well.
And that is easier for me to believe, because Ohio is very close to his part of the world, western Pennsylvania, and there is a lot of shared sentiment there among blue-collar Republicans, if you will, many of them Catholic, many of them people who at one time or another may have considered themselves Democrats, but like Rick Santorum and his family, made the transition to the Republican Party in the Ronald Reagan era. And especially on social issues, if not exclusively on social issues, they feel much more compatible with the Republican Party now than they might have a generation or two ago. Rick Santorum perfectly represents that, whereas Mitt Romney is much more the old country club kind of Republican whom they don't identify with.
I have three questions coming out. First of all, one, it seems like when Mitt Romney did very well in New Hampshire and Florida is because he spent a lot of money, and he spent a lot of money on negative campaigning. He did not do that in Colorado, Minnesota, Missouri.
And which as he had.
Probably. But the one question is the only way for Mitt Romney to win is to go expensive and negative? because that may be the case. I mean, that's what we've seen so far. Two, do the Republicans who love Rick Santorum know some of the out there statements he's made about, you know,
birth control?
Well, but a bit about women's rights and things like that. I mean, it does fire up the base. And obviously, Mitt Romney can't come in and say, well, you're too conservative.
No,
because
he can't
do that.
He can't come out and say, Rick, your position on abortion, your position on birth control, they're going to kill us in the fall.
You can't do that. And that's the problem. I mean, what he's going after Rick Santorum now is that he's for earmarks. I can't imagine voters getting excited or angry at the fact that Rick Santorum supports earmarks.
What he needs to do is to break the Santorum momentum. So he's not only running these ads in Michigan and Arizona, he's running them nationally, at least on cable nationally, and he is trying to suppress this Santorum surge that came out of that trifecta that we've talked so much about. So he has to take the shine off of the Santorum apple a little bit so that it doesn't look quite so much as though this guy is finally the magic non-Romney, if not anti-Romney. And in Santorum's case, I think he is close to being the anti-Romney, not just the non-Romney. He's just really different on every point.
Unlike Newt Gingrich, who I think for the most part it was personal, Santorum's opposition to Romney is really ideological, and it's more ideologically pure. But then the third question I was coming up with was, if Mitt Romney loses Michigan, what's the argument for his candidacy anymore? What's the
argument for his candidacy basically comes back to what it's always been, which is he's got the best chance of beating Obama. When he lost that distinction, as it were, to Rick Perry temporarily, when people thought, oh, Rick Perry, he's the contrast we want, and look at him, you know, he just looks like the kind of guy who's going to go on stage and knock Obama around. At that point, Rick Perry was the front runner, and it didn't look so much like he'd be good on stage against Obama, and he disappeared. And we went through the whole
But we didn't go to Romney after that.
No, we went to Herman Cain.
We went to Herman Cain, and we went to
Newt Gingrich. And when those people were found wanting by the Republican primary electorate, then they came back reluctantly, perhaps a little more reluctantly each time, to Mitt Romney, the supposedly inevitable, the guy who runs best, the guy who runs best in the polls against Barack Obama in November. That's still the bottom line.
Yes, it's the bottom line, but it reminds me a little bit of Howard Baker in 1980, that he was the Republican who was going to beat Jimmy Carter, not that wild-eyed extremist Ronald Reagan. Now, you could make the case, well, Rick Santorum. My point is, what happens if Rick Santorum wins Michigan, let's see, wins Arizona, and he wins Ohio, and he does well on Super Tuesday, and the Republican Party says, what have we just done?
They're going to then, if all those things happen, and I'm not endorsing, and I don't think you're necessarily predicting that that's going to happen.
I've given up predicting in this year.
That's a really good idea. Yeah. But to try to answer the hypothetical question, if those things happen, if Rick Santorum wins all those events, I don't see how you stop him.
Right.
Because then the large events that are coming, California, Texas, so forth, New York, those are going to be extremely difficult to keep away from him. And some of those are going to be winner-take-all, at least by CDs. And they're going to create the prospect of a huge wave of votes that'll be unstoppable. It'll be out of the control of the party.
I'm wondering if I'm sounding like moderate Republicans who were just flabbergasted at the rise of Barry Goldwater in 64, say, we're going to get clobbered in November. And I don't know if I'm sounding like that. I just feel
were
that...
Were they wrong?
Well, they weren't wrong at all. I'm not sure anybody could have beaten Lyndon Johnson in the wake of Kennedy's assassination. I don't know if Nelson Rockefeller couldn't have beaten him, or certainly Bill Scranton wasn't going to beat Lyndon Johnson. But I'm just wondering, it just feels like, given the antipathy Republicans have for Barack Obama. Yes, his numbers are going up. Yes, the economy is going
up.
Not
among Republicans, his numbers aren't going up. You're quite
right. No. But the antipathy among Republicans and then the fact that the economy is improving, and I'm sure Obama's numbers and the economy improving is not a coincidence. I think they go hand in hand. But there's still a large segment of the populace, or let's just say a large segment of the Republican Party, who really wants him gone in November. Can they be so disillusioned with Romney, saying, oh, he's this and this, and then suddenly get excited about Romney in November? Or maybe they could.
Yes, because when the primaries are over and the Republican nominee has been chosen, the issue will change, the question will change, the entire dynamic will change, and it will be all about this guy, whoever it is, or Barack Obama, and at that point, the Republicans will unite. Now, enthusiasm and unity are not the same thing.
Right.
They could be perfectly united behind Mitt Romney, and yet not just really all that excited. And if they're not really all that excited, they're going to have a much harder time beating Obama.
I think so, too. I mean, I know Republicans detested Bill Clinton in 1992, the draft dodger, the womanizer, all the charges made against him. And yet did they get excited about George H.W. Bush? They could not.
No, or about Bob Dole to some degree in 1996. Yeah. And that race was not close either, even though clearly the Republicans were united behind Dole. He wasn't really exciting to them.
Is this race, I mean, who knows what's going to happen? We're still in February, but is this race reminding you of 1996 in the sense that you have a president who seemed very vulnerable, all but gone in his first term, got a shellacking in the midterm elections, and then managed to basically take advantage of Republican disillusionment with their own candidate to win re-election?
It has all those aspects of 1996, yes. But the difference is that in 1996, the Mitt Romney character, who was Bob Dole at the time, wrapped everything up in a March South Carolina win, right. And after that, it was all stamp collecting, everybody else fell away. There's also an
although just for the record, Bob Dole did barely win Iowa when he should have won it big,
and he lost New Hampshire. Yeah. But he still was the de facto nominee in March. So there's that aspect of 96, and I am reminded of that.
We haven't said much about Newt Gingrich and Ron Paul. Two things. First of all,
when did they drop out?
Well, Ron Paul is still protesting the main caucuses where they declared Mitt Romney the winner while they're still counting the votes. Only 83% of the votes were counted. There were some caucuses that had to cancel because of whether they're going to be held later, but the state party says no, that they won't count in the ultimate tally.
So we learned a lesson in Iowa, didn't we?
Or Nevada. I mean, these are the states that want to be first, and yet they don't know how to count.
And they do not have the resources to count the vote properly. You know, even the vote at CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Conference, which Mitt Romney won, something of a surprise, he won it rather narrowly, just a few percentage points, but nonetheless, this would not seem to be his natural home ground, and he did win that, but then there were complaints about how he went about winning it and whether or not there were too many blandishments for people to vote for Romney.
Unlike every other CPAC straw poll. But it is interesting. Remember, 4 years ago when Mitt Romney won CPAC, that came 2 days after he dropped out of the race. But back then,
They loved him more as an idea.
But Mitt Romney was also the conservative alternative to John McCain.
It's probably too obvious to say that all of this kind of works for President Obama. I mean, there are those who believe that a long and contentious primary process on the Republican side is good for the eventual Republican nominee. I'm not so sure it's going to be if that nominee is Mitt Romney. Maybe it will be if it's Rick Santorum. But right now, it just looks like one more thing that's kind of working in the president's favor.
Another thing that may be helping the Democratic cause is the sense that the Republicans in the House caved on the extending the payroll tax cut. They fought for the longest time. They said there's no way we're going to do that without offsetting spending cuts.
It's $100 billion.
And they were getting pilloried by everybody saying that they're against the middle class, and the Republicans were taking it on the chin, and they basically did a complete turnaround this week.
And, you know, that had the effect, too, of upstaging, at least for the moment, and I realize every news story becomes the big news story, but it upstaged a little bit the controversy over contraception that had been a problem for the president, and it upstaged this document that he put out as the federal budget for the next fiscal year, which was clearly a campaign document. And
wait, it's not going to be enacted by Congress?
Yeah, it is obviously not even going to be considered really by Congress.
Reid said there won't be a vote on it. That's right.
The Senate Majority Leader. And meanwhile, on the Republican side in the House, they'll have hearings on it and do a little dance all over it and point out all of its contradictions and inconsistencies and these enormous deficits stretching as far as the eye can see and all of the things about it that can be criticized. So that all got upstaged by the Republicans pretty much deciding, all right, we won't make you pay for $100 billion in added deficit because it's a payroll tax cut for the middle class, and we're tired of being told we only like tax cuts for the rich.
Yeah, it seemed like a losing argument from the beginning, and you know, maybe this takes the issue off the table, but clearly the Republicans were looking at the polls and saying we're on the wrong side of this issue.
And speaking of Congress,
well, we have some political news this week as well. Joe Kennedy, the ninth, the third, the fourth.
It's the fourth, but his number's the third.
This
is complicated.
Bobby Kennedy's son's son, Bobby Kennedy's grandson, Bobby Kennedy's son, Joe Kennedy, who served in Congress, replaced Tip O'Neill. His son, Joe Kennedy, the 50th.
Third,
fourth.
Well, okay. There's old Papa Joe, who is the father of the Klan.
Right.
And then Joseph Kennedy Jr., right. who died in World War II.
Right.
Tragic story we don't have time for.
Right.
And then he had a son named Robert, of course, RFK, right. who had a son he named Joe and named Joseph II in honor of his martyred brother.
So Joseph III is announcing this week, officially announcing that he is a candidate for the now open seat being vacated by Barney Frank in Massachusetts around Boston area.
And if he were to be elected, Joseph III, or Little Joe, as some people call him, 31 years old, pretty good-looking kid, would solve the problem that Congress has been laboring under for a couple years now, which is that they didn't have a Kennedy.
Right. That streak started 1946 when JFK was elected to the House in Massachusetts.
That's right. And who knows? Maybe this brief interregnum is about to end.
You know, there's other things going on in Congress. Spencer Backus, the Republican from Alabama, who's the chairman of the House Financial Services Committee, is being accused of perhaps insider trading. There's a lot of things going on bad for Republicans, which ultimately could all benefit Obama and the Democrats.
We already mentioned the president's polls have risen a little bit.
Along
with the economy. People are feeling a little better about the economy. The unemployment new claims is down to a four-year low. So there are some good numbers. There's a lot of worries out there, of course, as well. A European situation, possible war forming in the Middle East between Israel and Iran and maybe involving us. So there are a lot of problems and a lot of shadows, but that underlying issue of the economy seems to be moving a little bit in the Democrats' direction, and manufacturing making a comeback. The president trying to highlight that.
And more confusing news for the Republicans is that the Iowa Republican Party announced today that the vice president of China has won the Iowa caucuses.
And that's it for this week's political podcast.
You can follow NPR's political coverage at npr.org/politics.
I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin.
Join us again next week for It's All Politics from NPR.
It seems like happiness is just a thing called joy. He's got a smile that makes the lilacs want to grow. He's got a way that makes the angels heave a sigh when they know little Joe's passing by.